All right, Elizabeth. Well, thank you for chatting with me today. Dr. Elizabeth Preston, I know you got your PhD in English, and I know now you get paid to write and help others write, and your title is Executive Consultant. Could you take a moment and just go a little bit more in depth into what your degree is in and then what you do now? And if I remember right, you have four different jobs, something like that. Is that correct?
Yes, I'm a very busy gal. I got my degree in English, PhD in English, back in 2021, and it has an emphasis in rhetoric and composition. So think like writing mixed with philosophy. And then I also have research emphases in humor writing and in writing center theory and practice. So right now, I do have four jobs. I work as a technical writer. I work as a copywriter for a marketing agency. I am the owner of Preston Inc. That's Ink, haha, the pun, which is a boutique writing and editing company. That's mine. And then I'm an executive consultant at Hurley Write, as well as the podcast producer and co-host of Hurley Write's The Writing Docs. So lots of stuff to do. In my role as an executive consultant at Hurley Write, I get to help businesses write more efficiently. I get to help their team members write more efficiently to reduce the time of their review processes and to overall make writing more effective for what they want it to do and less miserable for everybody because writing doesn't have to be miserable. So it's wonderful work. I love my job. Or job.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And I think as academics, folks who did grad school, of course you have to write. Some people do more so than others. And I think a lot of PhDs leave academia wanting to get a career where they get to keep using those skills of writing and communicating through written text. Back when you were in grad school, what were you envisioning as your future career after you finish grad school?
Oh, I wanted that tenure track job. Of course,
Sure.
everyone in the English department, not everyone, most of us wanted that coveted tenure track job where you're walking in as this hallowed professor and in nice clothes as the young minds are open and ready for your wisdom. That's what I wanted. Went a little differently.
Absolutely. And when did you either get a sense that it might go differently than you expected, or when did you decide, I'm going to pivot to something else?
So that's kind of a long story. I started looking for jobs when I knew I was going to graduate with my PhD. And I went, I need something else because I'm going to adjunct. I know that part. I was lucky enough to get online adjuncting from my alma mater, but that wasn't going to cover everything. So I needed more. I went and got out some other jobs, went into very different worlds than I ever thought I'd be in. When it was in the NFT world for a while, which was weird and strange. But then I came back and I'm like, okay, I still want to have this writing job. And I started getting more and more jobs and having more and more opportunities, particularly this copywriting job at a marketing agency. I love the people I work with are awesome. And my job at Hurley Write, executive consultants. And then this job popped up at my alma mater. I didn't want to move. I love Nevada. I'm in Nevada and I will stay here all of my days. So this was my one shot. It was the writing job, not exactly tenure track, but kind of sniffing at it. And I went, if I do this, if I apply and I get it, I have to give up everything. I have to give up everything else. And I went, I'm not ready to do that. I'm not willing to give up everything that I've built on the side that I thought was just going to be side hustles. They suddenly became my main focus, and I'm not ready. And that's when I thought, okay, this is a marker of me moving out, of me leaving. I still did some adjuncting, not great pay, but still fun. I got to teach screenwriting. I mean, that's super fun, but it was a mark that would probably not be my future.
Interesting. Interesting. And I think your experience of getting maybe a little bit out of academia and learning about what you could do outside of the ivory tower, and then looking back at those kind of coveted academic roles and not seeing them as enticing as before. I think that's a common experience. And this, of course, is not a nationally representative sample, but I did a story poll on Instagram a few weeks ago asking PhDs who've made it out of academia and have careers if they would go back to academia if they were basically just given a tenure track job that already had tenure. They didn't even need to work for tenure anymore. And over 80% of them said they would not give up their industry careers to go back to academia for even a already tenured professor job. And I think there's something in there that is important. I mean, obviously my sample is biased, but when you're a grad student, that's all you see for a lot of people is that tenure track role and a little bit of a pivot. You said you adjuncted.
I did.
Do you think other grad students should consider adjuncting?
It depends on what your focus is. So my heart, my passions lie in teaching and in writing. I love teaching. I'm good at it. It's fun for me. It's like a hobby almost that I get paid for. So adjuncting, that's really fun for me. But if you are looking to start building your finances, I understand a lot of us getting out of grad school, PhDs, we don't have the finances that others our age have built up. We've kind of put that to the side. If you are looking to help your finances to start growing the way you want to grow towards retirement, adjuncting long-term is probably not going to be your best friend. If you are looking for supplementary income and you enjoy teaching, you must enjoy teaching. Otherwise, don't do it. Try out adjuncting. Don't expect a lot of money. Use it as vacation money.
Absolutely. And you said previously that one of your roles is as a technical writer. Is that correct?
Yes.
Now, okay, great. That is a role I don't know a lot about. I looked into it a little bit back before whenever I was trying to figure out what I was going to do with my career. And I'd love to know from your perspective and your experience, like what is the role of a technical writer? What do you do? Who are the kinds of grad students and academics who that's a perfect fit for? Anything along those lines?
That's a great question, Matt. And not only am I a technical writer myself, I also teach a lot of technical writers at Hurley Wright. I coach a lot of technical writers at Hurley Wright. Technical writer is kind of the title you get for writing at your company. It doesn't matter if it's the engineering, if it's in research science, pharmaceuticals, tech. My technical writer job is in education. You wouldn't think that, right? Education technical writer. But that's kind of the title that you're given when you have to write for the company with the company's voice, using the company's lingo, the jargon, the specialized language that they need for their specific audience. That's what you do as a technical writer. And on the Writing Docs podcast, we have a couple technical writers that talk about being able to jump from audience to audience, understanding this is what my audience needs for this job, for this document, for this purpose. And then I have to change if I have a different document. And that adaptation, that changing from audience to audience, from document to document, even within one organization, that's where a lot of technical writers have trouble, especially because, you know, let's be honest, grad school, undergrad, does not teach us to write in the workplace. It teaches us to write in academia, does a fine job, thank you very much, wonderful. It doesn't teach us to write in the real world. So that's kind of what technical writing is. Again, depends on industry to industry, but the main nuts and bolts of it are, who's your audience? What document are you writing? How do you write in the company's voice with its specialized language?
Interesting. And what kind of a grad student, whether it's like skill-based or the field they come from, do you think would excel in a technical writer role?
I'm going to say everyone, and because I know some people, especially engineers, I hear so many engineers go, I'm not a writer. I hate writing. I'll never be a writer. I promise you, if you have the right tools, if you have the right training, you can be a writer. You can write. I'm not saying you can be Stephen King. That's a whole different ballgame. But you can write successfully in your company for your role, for the communications that you have to do. So you just need the tools for it.
Very cool. And going back to those four different jobs, it sounds like they might fall into different buckets of maybe like W-2 or part-time employee and perhaps some entrepreneurship or consulting, and then also maybe some freelance work. Is that accurate?
I think the technical writer might be a W-2, although it functions like contract. Everything else I do is contract, which I think can be pretty scary for grad students hearing that. Oh, God, I don't have a 401k ready. Oh, gosh, I don't have matching this or health insurance. I promise it's fun being a contractor. It is really fun. It's flexible. And you can make changes to combat what you may be missing from a W-2.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Let's start with the W-2 style position. How did you break into that role? How did you break into that company? What were maybe some of the steps when it came to like resumes or LinkedIn or networking or anything like that?
Well, one of the first steps everyone should be taking is looking at your 6-week checklist, Matt. That's one of the first things everyone should be doing. I followed you on Instagram at the time, so I was looking at your tips and your guidance, and I was altering my resume to fit what you were saying, because I did what a lot of PhDs do when they get out of academia. Let me give you my CV with absolutely everything on it, with all the details. Here you go. Yeah. I was not having success at that. Then when I started altering my resume to fit more with what you were saying, to do it for people that wanted to know what I could do rather than what I did, the details. No one cares about the details. I'm sorry, they don't. They care more about what you can do for them. That's when I started getting bites. I was applying mostly on LinkedIn, and I got an interview with this W-2 job. It turns out the interviewer was also a writing center consultant way back in the day, and I was a writing consultant as well as a wee undergrad. So we were able to connect. And it was then I was starting to see, yeah, my PhD as a shingle will get me opportunities for interviews. But it's how I interact as a human being. And it's talking as a human being that gets me the job. And that's how I got that job.
That's awesome. Do you remember maybe how long you were on the job market before you got that job, or how many applications you sent out?
I had jobs before that job.
Okay.
I had the NFT job before I had that job, which, again, very strange world, but it made me learn to adapt to new things, to be open to new things. Naturally, I'm kind of like, let me stick in my little niche, right? My one little research niche and not expand. Mm-hmm. That job forced me to learn, to be open to new concepts. And I was constantly looking for jobs. My husband would even take away my phone and be like, that's enough. You've had enough applying for jobs today. So I had that one. I was also working for a real estate company doing ghostwriting, not ghostwriting. I did get the credits for that one, but writing articles for them. The W-2 job. So I think those jobs, the NFT and the real estate, took me about month to 2 months to get. Once I altered my resume to fit what you were saying, I think if I stuck with my old one, it would have been much longer. It's only because I listened to you. And from that time, those two jobs to getting the W-2 job, probably about 2 months. So that's
actually really short.
I think part of it is just because of the hustle. You have to keep applying. You have to keep putting yourself out there. Believe me, I got plenty of rejections. Part of it was because I did not narrow my field. I was applying to everything, everything from let me be your curriculum designer to let me help you write video games. That's not the best approach. It might have even been faster if I had done your approach of sticking to a niche.
Yeah.
Or a niche.
What other things do you think, either slip-ups that you made or slip-ups that you see other people that you know make whenever they exit academia and enter the non-academic job market?
You have to let go of some of your academic achievements. I know you did them. I know that they were a big deal to you. They were a big deal to academia. They're not a big deal in the real world. And that can be gutting. There were conference presentations that I was super proud of. I had to nix them off of the resume because my jobs that I were applying to did not care. And it felt like someone had ripped out my stomach and stomped on it. All that work, no one's going to appreciate. Yeah. And view it more instead of work lost, as that all made you into the person you are applying for the job that you have now. It's still part of you, even if the employer doesn't know. So you have to, someone said, kill your darlings in writing. You have to kill your darlings on your resume. Every one of us has to do it. The other problem that I see academics having, and that I was trained out of through other work that I did, I was pitching to Hollywood execs screenplays, because I write screenplays as well. No one will beat you down like a Hollywood exec will. They will let you know when you're talking like an academic. They will let you know when you are not being concise. So being able to take all that mumbo jumbo academic talk and make it accessible, make it into something you can actually talk to people about, which isn't that hard. You just think, how would you tell your mom or your dad or your aunt or your uncle about your work? What do you say when you go home for Christmas on what you're working on? That's kind of how you're going to talk to the job market. So that's another aspect that I see. Now, in my work at Hurley Wright, I see a lot of those academics come in, and we've had a lot of managers and business owners be frustrated saying, I can't get them to stop thinking like an academic. I can't get them to stop writing like an academic. I have this super smart person and they're failing. What do I do? And part of that is learning the tools of writing in the real world, which Hurley Wright can help with. We have some self-paced online courses and coaching. I'm actually the coach. I can help you. And we also have team trainings where the essence is getting them to understand their audience and what their audience wants and needs, not what you want and need as the writer, but your audience. So those are just three kind of issues that I see quite often with academics trying to go into industry.
Awesome. I loved all three of those. And frankly, when you were talking about killing your darlings on your resume, I remember when I went on the job market, I went on there twice. The first time was an utter failure. I applied to tons of different kinds of industry jobs. I had a really bad resume. And then I finally kind of grew up, shook myself off, did a bunch of prep work, and then went on the job market again. And I remember deleting things off my resume, and it felt like, it did feel like a loss. And like I was saying, these things weren't important anymore. And I think that emotional aspect is something that catches a lot of people and makes a lot of people perhaps slow down their progress towards starting an industry career or any kind of non-academic career. And the whole sunk cost fallacy, not just at a cognitive level, but I think at an emotional level, of saying that if not everything I did and not all my sacrifices are appreciated, then it wasn't worth it. And that's just not true. And then in a practical sense, it's like, your resume is a marketing document. I mean, it should be catching attention. It's not about you. It's about the person reading it. And I'd love to hear a little bit more about what you do at Hurley Wright and the kinds of problems you solve and how that relates to academics as they transition to the industry market.
Sure. Also, I want to go back to a point that you made about this emotional aspect. I think that's one thing that no one really preps grad students for. There is a period of mourning, and you have to allow yourself that mourning of, I had this dream of a tenure track job. I had this dream of walking down the halls in a professional dress or sport coat and tie or whatever it is. And being okay with letting that dream go. And then allowing yourself to be excited about what could be. It's difficult emotions that people don't tell you about before you go on to the market. Now for Hurley Wright, we help teams and individuals figure out how to write more efficiently, more effectively, and achieve the outcomes that they want. Now, what does that actually mean? It means a lot of your documents are not doing what you want them to do. They're wordy, they're unclear, they're ineffective, they're making your manager upset. But there are miscommunications oftentimes within businesses where, okay, they think it's just grammar. That's the problem. Of course it must be grammar. That's the problem. It's never grammar. It's never grammar. And I love grammar. I'm a grammar nerd. Rather, it's changing this good critical thinking and problem-solving skills that these academics have and making those fit what the real world, what industry needs. It's not getting rid of everything. It's changing it and reframing things to understand what is needed. It is learning the tools to help you get documents that speak to your audience, that get your proposals granted, that get the money and the grants that you're aching for, that get whatever you need done. It can go all the way down from those big high stakes documents to emails. I mean, I don't know about you, Matt. I was never taught how to write an email in graduate school. No one told me about that. In fact, I would venture that our professors' emails would drive our bosses nuts.
Probably.
But when we give those tools, when we give that training to academics, they'll pick it up, no problem. And then you see their communications actively being effective, being efficient, and making their professional lives a lot easier and their managers a lot happier. So for your listeners, we do have self-paced online courses, and they can come with coaching, which is me. I get the transition. I get how hard that is. And one of my passions is making writing less miserable for people. That's one reason why I love my job. I can help make writing less miserable for you. And if you're finding that you're struggling in your current job, and you're going, I don't know why my communications are not getting me what I want. I don't know why my writing keeps getting all this red ink back and all these revision requested. Come talk with me. That's with my business with Hurley Wright. You can go to our website. You can find me on LinkedIn and we can talk about things. I'd love to talk with people.
Absolutely. And where should folks go to learn more about the courses and potential coaching?
You can go to hurleywright.com, which is HurleyWrite.com. Check out our resources there. We have things that are free. We have white papers, blog posts. Listen to the podcast, The Writing Docs, to hear what are managers frustrated with. Okay, I see I'm doing that. I'll fix it. I also have the business of Preston Inc., where I help those. I do a bunch of different writing and different ghostwriting and editing. But for your audience, if you need help editing your dissertation and getting out of academia so you can move on, come talk to me. Or if you need help doing a digital writing portfolio, because if you are doing any sort of writing, if you're applying for jobs, you should have that digital writing portfolio to show employers. That's going to put you ahead above the rest and help to show employers, I can make this transition from academia to industry. Let me show you. then come talk with me. That's not a Hurley Wright, that's more pressed in ink, but I just want to put that out there as well, because I don't want people to be miserable as they make this transition. It's hard enough. So if there are tools, if there are resources to make it easier, less painful, I'm all for that.
Absolutely. And I'm happy to put a link to the website in the description, so anyone listening or watching can click the description and get a link to Hurley right there. And thank you. Of course. And the other thing I wanted to say was, I was, of course, interviewed on your podcast, The Writing Docs, yesterday. Now, this episode will come out probably before my episode with you yesterday. But whenever it does come out, I'll plug away to get people to go over there and check that out. Could you let us know, what does the Writing Docs podcast cover? What kind of content do you talk about?
We mostly focus on the industries, pharmaceutical, technology, engineering. However, there's still writing principles and tools that we give that everybody can use. It's great for writers who want to move into writing that does what they want it to do, that meets the outcomes that they want. It's also great for business owners, for thought leaders, for managers to understand. For your episode, for example, managers, if you're wondering why academics are having problems with this transition from academia to industry, you tell us why, Matt. You give us the framework that has to be changed. You give us kind of the inside scoop. Oh gosh, that sounds so clickbaity, but it's true, on why that is. So it's kind of like, here's what academia forgot to tell you.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's a great point. I think there are, academia, I think, sees a very small incentive or no incentive for preparing graduate students for employment outside academia. And I think it benefits academia to have this huge burden, or this huge amount of PhDs that need employment and want to stay in academia and get jobs there because they just don't know anything else. And so a question for you, for the PhDs, whether they're grad students or they're postdocs or professors, and they're wanting to shift to academia, when it comes to writing and communicating, whether that's on a resume or in an email or in presentation, what are two or three practical things that they should maybe be doing differently than what comes to them naturally as a PhD?
One, you need to get some writing training. Academia didn't give you the tools. If that's with Hurley Wright, I'd love that. If it's with someone else, just do something. Do some other writing training. Get some other writing coaching. Talk with people. I'd also say with writing, no one cares about the details anymore. I know that hurts to hear. It hurt me to hear. I have a beautiful dissertation title that I was super happy with. I don't use that to talk about it anymore. I'm like, it's about using humor writing to teach freshman composition students how to write. And it's like, okay. Now that may feel bad to you. It may feel bad to give such a simplistic, or at least seemingly simplistic, view of your work. But I promise you, it's, if you can speak simply, if you can speak like a human being, if you can speak and communicate clearly, that's going to get you really, really far, and much further than if you try to impress people with the big words that you know, with the fancy language. That's going to be your better strategy. I also want to give two suggestions that are not necessarily writing related, but I think are important. One is to watch Randy Pausch's last lecture on YouTube, because he talks about how we start out with these dreams. Life gets in the way. We go different routes and we think, well, these dreams are never going to come true. And then they end up coming true in ways we never could have imagined. And the second is, after you've mourned the idea of staying in academia, after you've mourned that dream, be excited about going and getting a new dream. There are so many possibilities. as you said, Matt, I have four jobs I do in place of the three classes I used to teach. It is so exciting. Allow yourself to be excited and to dream big and go in different directions and try something new. It's scary, but I promise you it's a grand adventure.
Yeah, I love that. And I, frankly, even after I got my industry job, there was an internalized feeling of I'm a failure. I had to do my plan B. That I was on like a lesser than path, and it did take time to work that out. And frankly, now I'm as excited about working further into data analytics or looking into data science one day as I used to be about research stuff. And I never would have expected myself to say that, you know, 4 years ago, whenever I was in the peak of my academic career and love for academic research, but you will fall in love again.
Yes. Oh my goodness. How very clinically therapist of you, Matt. You will fall in love again. And it's okay to say, if you want to use the word fail at a dream, okay. I don't think I necessarily agree with fail. It's more like, I want to get a different dream. I want to chase something new, and I give you permission to chase something new. It's okay. I give you permission to be excited about the unknown.
Yeah, I love that. Elizabeth, is there anything you wanted to chat about today that we didn't get to already?
I think we covered it. Just if folks want to get in contact to see if Hurley Wright's right for them, or if Preston Inc. can help them out with writing portfolios, digital writing portfolios, or with their dissertations, hit me up on LinkedIn. It's just Elizabeth Preston at LinkedIn. Check out the Hurley Wright website and check out the Writing Docs podcast, especially Matt's episode when it comes out.
Right on. All right. And I'll have links to all of it, except, of course, my podcast episode being interviewed by you, because that won't have come out yet. But I'll have links to everything in the episode description. All right, Elizabeth, last question for you. What is one thing you think grad students should do before they finish their program? Could be fun, could be serious, whatever makes sense.
I'm going to have to go the serious route. Start applying for jobs. Get out there, make those mistakes, then go check out Matt's 6-week checklist so you can fix those mistakes, and then keep applying. And if you get those rejections, yeah, it's fine. It's okay. Rejections happen. Don't count them. Do not count your rejections. That does not help. And just keep applying. You never know where life's going to take you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for chatting with me, Elizabeth. This has been awesome.
Thank you, Matt.
All right. Talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye.